ready or not, here I come. You can't hide. Gonna find you and take it slowly. Ready or not, here I come. You can't hide. Gonna find you and make you want me.
Now that I escape, sleep, walk awake. Yeah. Those who correlate know the world ain't cake. Jail bars ain't golden gates. Those who fake, they break when they meet their 400-pound mate.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to Spin Class Podcast. This is episode 3. I am joined all the way over on the West Coast by Tyler Kale. How you doing, Tyler?
Hell yeah, I'm doing good. I'm glad everyone loves our show. Like, we have a real official show now and lots of fans.
Yeah, I mean, I'm having fun with it. I think finding a, you know, a classic hip hop album is something that we could keep going on. And yeah, this week we'd like to tackle the 1996 classic, The Score, by the one and only Fugees.
Oh my God! Do you know what it makes me think of? Like, I relate everything to sports. You know, so all I can think of is like the 49ers in the Super Bowl, like beating the Chargers, and like the Braves playing the Indians in the World Series, I want to say. Like, it just takes me back to the mid-90s, you know? That's...
Yeah, and the Bulls coming back after 2 years off.
Yeah, too. Well...
Yeah.
That meant a little more to you based on your location, but yeah.
Wasn't that a worldwide thing, the Bulls, though? No, it wasn't? No.
Yeah, I mean, I liked them, but it wasn't... Like, basketball was always my third favorite sport, so I cared way more about baseball and football anyway.
Oh, I got you. It wasn't like the Houston Rockets was like a worldwide phenomenon in 95, Hakeem Olajuwon or stuff like
that. No, but that team was dope, though. You couldn't stop Hakeem.
And they're coming back this year, too. It's a 20-year itch, I guess.
Well, they're not – I wouldn't call them coming back. They're about to get swept.
Yeah, that's true. But, yeah, it's been a good playoffs. But, yeah, back to The Score, released January of 96 after a big, huge commercial flop for their first album, Blunted on Reality. I guess their label said, you got one more chance. Here's $150,000. They set up a studio in Wyclef's uncle's basement, called it the Booga Basement, and just started chopping away at it in 95.
Well, what stands out to me the most is, like, I always used to make fun of, like, female rappers. What's that one in the early 90s, like, Yo-Yo, or what's her – what the fuck was her name? I forget.
Yo-Yo, yeah, and the Lady of Rage.
Yeah. But, like, Lauryn Hill, it was like, oh, fuck. I remember thinking, like, this used to be, like, a punchline to me when I was, like, a punk-ass, like, 10-year-old or 12 – 96, so I would have been 13 – but I remember being like, holy shit, like, she was like the shit, like, she was scary. It was like, it was black empowerment meets female empowerment, and like the pinnacle of that was her, like, this afro crazy woman who was just the baddest ass. Like, she's scary. Like, I would shake in my boots if she came up to me.
She was scary, but she also broke the mold, because unlike Queen Latifah, unlike Yo-Yo or the Lady of Rage, she was actually physically attractive.
Yes!
And had good eyes, had a good figure about her, and so it was weird. You're right, it's empowering both female and African-American, and sexy, too.
Right, and the dudes felt like her lackeys. Like, like,
right.
Praz, that was like, get my boots, Praz. Like, fuck you, go fuck Maya, you know?
Go get your shine box, Praz. Yeah. and I love how, like, that album was so huge that it even birthed a Praz solo album. And a Praz, I think, number one hit with Ghetto Superstar.
That's the Maya song, right? Wasn't it?
Yeah.
That's right. Yeah.
Bulworth.
Uh-huh. Absolutely. But it really is. Like, it. I love it. And I love this about movies, too. Shit that, like, you go back to as an adult, and it's still as good, if not better, you know? And, like, so few things have that same effect. Like, nothing's ever as good as it was, you know, but then you get that's what separates the true art from the rest of the bullshit, you know?
Yeah, I think that's what separates a 4-star with a 5-star classic. The 4-star you loved when it came out, it was great, but then maybe revisiting it, you're like, it doesn't quite hold up. The 5-star, like, I just put on The Score a couple days ago, and it's great. I listened to the whole thing, didn't have to skip anything, was you know, nearly a perfect album at its time.
Yeah, I mean, Lauryn Hill, it reminds me of Tupac. It's like fucking, it's fire breathing. It's more than just the rapping and the singing. This is like, she's eviscerating people. Like, it's Khaleesi is based on her from Game of Thrones.
That's but, true.
Yeah, it's really good, man.
And what was I going to say? There is... somebody said that it was nice in 1996 to hear an album that had zero fingerprints of Dr. Dre on it. It didn't sound anything like Dr. Dre or G-Funk.
It did not, no. But I still loved that, too. Like, I was still all about Warren G and the G-Funk and Nate Dogg. Nate Dogg was always my favorite because he was so smooth. But she was almost like – Lauryn Hill was almost like Nate Dogg and Warren G put together, you know?
Fine.
She had the rapping. Plus, she had, like, pipes. Like, she was, like, an awesome singer. So – yeah, I can't get enough. Like, if you're out there, Lauren, I will date you, even though you spell your name funny. Like, that's one of my huge pet peeves. I hate that. Spelling your name all weird.
That is true. Yeah, and then we go the first 5 minutes without even mentioning the whole mastermind behind the thing, Wyclef Jean. I mean, this was his group. He was a genius for realizing, hey, I don't have as much charisma as possible. Let's find this attractive young singer. I think they were dating at the time.
Yes.
And that brought them to a whole nother echelon, right?
Well, absolutely. That's what you call a muse, right? I mean, that's that is all great men are springboarded by awesome women. So it's the truth. Like, yeah, he absolutely couldn't have done it without her. Like, and it's hard to realize, especially in like this industry, entertainment, you know, is that, hey, maybe I'm not the man. Maybe I'm second banana and I need the man to prop me up to like show my best.
That's beautiful. That's exactly what he did.
But but yes, but in such an ego-driven world, like this Hollywood music, it's all like the same. They're all like bastards of the same like dad who goes around and fucks different women. It's a game dominated by ego. And when you can realize your own strengths and weaknesses, like that is like, yeah, that's everything. You're ahead of everyone if you can do that. So,
and Wyclef was from Haiti and lived in a hut.
Oh, hell,
the epitome of poor. Yes. And I heard him on an interview saying that at one point in his childhood he had to eat red dirt, and just to feel something going through his stomach. And now he's driving a Lamborghini, and it's not the Haiti story. That's the American story right there, coming from nothing and then coming, you know.
Well, it's
– owning the world. I mean, you can say he hasn't had a hit in a long time. I'm sure he's still making money off this album. I love the Carnival. I think that's almost as good as this album, the solo Wyclef album.
Yes,
that came out the next year.
That was the next year, right. And that was – what's it called? Gone Till November, right?
Gone Till November. The Bee Gees remake is on there, Trying to Stay Alive.
Uh-huh.
Lots of good stuff on there, and it was pretty much a Fugees album. Lauren was on a lot of that.
Well, yes, and that shit, that like, it doesn't matter if you make another album after that. You've already changed the stratosphere. Like, what else? And even if you do other stuff, it's never going to be as good. So what's the point? Really, what's the point?
That's true. It is upsetting that they never were able to get back together. But
they're too crazy, man. Like, Lauryn Hill is like the most talented person in the world, but like, she's out of her mind nuts. And it's just, God doesn't give with both hands. Like, you can't make this well-adjusted person who's also an awesome artist. Like, it just doesn't work. Like, when I'm in my like my most terrible, heartbroken states, that's when I make the best stuff. When life's going good, like, I'm not compelled to write.
That is so true. I can't tell you.
Yeah.
That is right on the dot. Yeah. But, yeah, every episode we're going to do a little spiel off Wikipedia. It's the most proven source on the internet. Not really, but I thought I would. Just an easy little light reading here. Okay, the score is the second and final. I don't know how they know it's final, but the final studio album by the hip-hop trio Fugees. I mean, unless they're 6 feet under, they could always come back.
It's final.
And make a terrible watered-down Shadow of Its Former Self reunion album in 2016 or something.
I'll tell you what, if the price is right, they'll probably do it, you know?
How could the price have not been right yet? I mean,
well, what happens when you put romance. I mean, like, when romance is in the picture, it makes everything fucking crooked. You just can't, like, there's no stun button when you're in a relationship. It's only bullets, you know, and it just severs everything. Like, you can't undo it. You can't.
That's
like,
a girlfriend rule, or it should be.
Well, it's true, though. Like, the girl I was just talking to today, we can try as hard as we want to be, like, friends, but we can't undo, like, the romantic. Like, there's no, like, no matter how much dirt you scrape over home plate, everyone still knows the strike zone, you know? Everyone knows. Like, what are we doing here? We're dancing, you know? It's stupid, but yeah.
It just dawned on me. They're kind of like the rap Fleetwood Mac.
Yes, right? Exactly. They are. Talk about terms we need to coin. Put that on Wikipedia.
All right. So it was released worldwide February 13th, 1996 on Columbia Records. The album features a wide range of samples and instrumentation, with many aspects of alternative hip-hop that would come to dominate the hip-hop music scene in the mid to late 1990s. The score's production was handled mostly by Fugees themselves and Jerry Duplessis, guessing a Jewish guy, or so, I don't know, with additional production from Salam Remy, John Forte, which was also a rapper on the album too, Diamond D and Sean King. The album's guest raps are from Outside as member Rod Digga, Young Z and Pace One, as well as Omega, John Forte, and Diamond D. Most versions of the albums feature four bonus tracks, including three remakes of Fuji La and a short acoustic Wyclef Jean solo track entitled Mista Mista. And they're totally right about that, kind of helping out the independent hip-hop scene. I mean, the Roots would definitely,
yes,
borrow something from the Fugees.
There is no Roots without the score. I can guarantee you that.
That is true. Like, they actually used instruments, which was something that was kind of unheard of.
Yeah. I mean,
been done rarely in hip-hop before them. And Wyclef can actually play guitar and can produce music and is not just about sampling.
Well, that's truly the gift of this great shit. It's the reason they really don't have to make another album. It's because you have to think of this as a family tree. You know, look at the kids that they sprouted, you know? They sprouted all these other groups who have stood on their shoulders and moved forward. So, like, their work is really done, you know? Now it's like, hey, go play, Roots, you know? Become that house band on whatever show that is. What are they, the house band on?
They're on Fallon.
Yeah, Fallon, that's right.
How'd you feel about Dave Letterman saying goodbye? I wasn't like a – I'll be honest, I rarely watched Letterman. Maybe more of when I was little and stuff like that. But yeah, it was kind of weird to see him say goodbye. It's kind of something I will actually miss a little bit, just having him there, you know?
I never was super into any other late night besides Johnny Carson, and my mom had, like, she had, like, the VHS collection of every Carson ever. So
nice.
I went from Johnny Carson to, like, Howard Stern was where I got my entertainment, like, instead of late night stuff when I was, like, in the 90s. It was all about Howard Stern for me. Like, so, I don't know. I kind of missed the boat on Letterman and Leno, and I don't know. I just never really got into it.
Yeah, not so much. If I was going to watch something late night, it would have to be SNL. I think that was more of a – I couldn't just get into one guy, seeing the same one guy every night.
But, like, it's just, I mean, he must have been great, though, because, like, my heroes, like, I know, like, Jimmy Kimmel and Dave Damashek, like, they worship at his altar. Like, he was their guy. He's what brought them to Hollywood. Just like what brought me to Hollywood was wanting to bang, like, Abby Lee Kershaw. What brought them to Hollywood was – like David Letterman, they wanted to be like him. So
yeah. And the Norm Macdonald, did you happen to see his final appearance?
No, I don't.
It's first of all, it's 8 minutes of amazing comedy, and then Norm, the most stoic guy, gets choked up towards the last 30 seconds of it, and he's crying at the end of it as he says goodbye. It was touching, actually, because you're like Norm Macdonald of all people. Like, it's weird when you see – I mean, I wouldn't be surprised seeing somebody else cry, but Norm Macdonald, it's like it shows that there's a true emotion involved. I think David Letterman was more of kind of like a parallel to the Fugees. He was more of the alternative comedy that would not be considered comedy in the 60s and 70s.
Correct.
It was weird comedy, which – you got to respect.
So. Yeah, well, and he had a hell of a run. I mean, that's why it's super – it's change is really hard. I mean, when you're used to something for, like, however long he was on the air, like 30 years, you know, like it's – that's – I mean – and then that's not there. It's like, holy shit, what am I going to do without it, you know?
Yeah, you don't miss it till it's gone. Yeah. But yeah, but we'll be right back after this. But yeah, this album was built on samples, and I thought this would be interesting to play right here. Let's see if it'll if you'll be able to even hear it here. One second. All right, we are back, and yeah, that was Tina Marie, which I'm not too, I don't know a whole lot about her, but even now she looked very beautiful, and it says she's been dead for 4 years. I don't know, she must have died young.
Wow. So
she's really good looking, but in the comments it says her voice is really annoying and other stuff. But yeah, I guess as rap and hip-hop often does, they'll recycle stuff. I mean, I don't think it's being lazy. A lot of, like, rocker guys will say, oh, you can't play an instrument, you're being lazy. I think it's finding a really good melody and then making it your own. And then, I think it's creative.
The Puff Daddy model, you know?
Yeah, and I believe wasn't Run DMC doing that in, like, the 1985
Hell that,
and stuff?
They all
yeah.
did it. I mean, Tribe Called Quest, like, that's how, what's the lead singer of Tribe Called Quest? Q-Tip. Like, that's what gave him, that's what made Q-Tip, was sampling, like, old jazz things. It's been done since the beginning of time. There's no...
You could almost claim it's racist saying that samples aren't music because... When these rappers started out in the late 70s, they didn't have the guitar, they didn't have the bass or the drum set. They had turntables, and then they had records.
Right.
And they would just loop the same beat and then rap over it, and that's what they had, that's what they were used to. So, I mean, it's still going on, it'll go on forever,
Hell,
I think.
Art is art. Everything is, like, everything is connected, everything's been thought of 100 times. You just have to put a new spin on it. That's just... You can't write. It's 2015. You can't write anything that hasn't been written before. There's no such thing. There's no such thing. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah. And that's why if Carlos Mencia knocked on my front door, I wouldn't knock him out. I would say I'm not a fan of yours, but I don't hate you. I mean, it's not like you might have stole it word for word, but whatever. I mean, it's you put it in your own style, your own voice. I wouldn't kill the man if I saw
what,
him. You know?
He stole like some serious, like he stole verbatim shit though, correct? Like,
I believe now it's been proven. I think Joe Rogan was the one who spearheaded that, right?
Yeah, well, I don't like that. That's a little different from parallel thought, so.
And I just don't care for his comedy just to begin with. He could make it original, too, and I still would
yeah,
be a fan.
Yeah, well.
So, all that George Lopez, Carlos Mencia, when you just play up the Latino factor of your comedy just so you can pander to that audience, I mean, go ahead and I'm sure they're making tons of money doing that, but it's just not my style.
Absolutely. Like, I'm going to talk about, like, my comedy material should be based on being super handsome. Like, that's going to be my... It just so happens that alienates everyone, so I can't use it as a crutch. Like, I love that double standard, how, like, Melissa McCarthy is allowed to talk about being super fat. Like, that's how she's made her fortune. But the minute I start talking about who I am, it's like, oh, he's an asshole. So, fuck you, public.
That is true. And another thing I wanted to hit on with this was that, like, the ubiquitous nature of albums in 96, was there, it was like there was 20, maybe 15 hit albums in 1996, and we would just hear them until they were stuck in our conscious. Now there's 15 hit albums every week.
Right? Oh, my God. Well, I don't even know what's out right now.
I mean, I don't stay current with it, but I feel like a hit goes away. They burn out so much quicker nowadays.
Well, right? I got a new car, I told you, and I have like XM radio, and it's like it plays like a pop station, and it's all like, I don't know if this is me being like a grandpa, like Grandpa Corolla, but it's really unbelievably bad, and I can't believe how everyone loves it. Like, it's mind-boggling. But then at the same time, people love like Mad Max, and it's like it makes me feel like everyone is just retarded. Like,
what did you feel about Mad Max?
It's not even close. Like, all the same people who made fun of, like, the Road Warrior, like, you can't make fun of the Road Warrior and then like this piece of flaming shit. Like, it's not, they're at least the same. Right? Like, I'm
hearing it's the greatest action movie of all time.
Do you know who the third lead is? Freaking Abby Lee Kershaw. She's a model from Australia. So how can it be the greatest movie when your third lead is a freaking model and Elvis Presley's daughter? Like, that's not a movie.
That is, yeah. I don't believe the hype, as Flava Flav would say.
No.
It takes me a while to believe the hype on,
like,
anything now.
As super gay as Road Warrior is, I mean, even Mad Max's name is, like, super gay. His last name is, like, Max. I forget what his last name is, but it's super gay. And then the bad guy is named Lord Humongous, and he's in underwear and boots and a mask. I made the joke that it's more like 50 Shades of Grey. Nice. than the new Mad Max, you know, but... I don't know. Go watch. It's really good. That's why I recommend this. Listen to the food.
Do you stay up on comic book movies? Because now Superman Giovanni is awesome, and he's executive producer of this, but I was listening to Pod Gods, and they did about 30 minutes on the Avengers.
Oh.
And it was like they were speaking Swahili for me. I don't. Are you up on those movies?
No, I do not. Wait, hold on. Let me tell you Max's name. Max Rakotansky. Now tell me that doesn't sound like the lead in a gay porn. Max.
He's a good Polish guy from the south side, right?
With a half chub. He walks in every scene with a half chub. But look, no, I hate Avengers and all that bullshit. It sucks. I hate it. I really hate it. You know,
I think it's a thing of you were cracking comic books in 1994, and I was listening to music in 1994 and watching the baseball strike and stuff like that. So that's what is near and dear in my heart. It's what you like when you're 11 and 12 for your whole life.
Well,
right?
I don't like this. Just it's become like bigger than everything. I mean, how many Captain Americas, how many Avengers, how many Iron Mans? Like, enough is enough. Like, it loses. It's like, yes, the first time you have sex with like a skinny, symmetrical girl. It's like the most amazing thing, because your whole life you've been having sex with like girls with like rolls and shit. And then you have sex with someone with a perfect body. It's like, holy shit. Like, wow. But then you have sex with her 100 times and it's like, it might as well be the chubby girl again. And that.
It's like trying crack after smoking cigarettes.
Right. But then that's what they're doing with this, like, superhero shit. Like, the first X-Men was really good in like 2001 or 2002, but now we're at like the 25th like movie with Wolverine. It's like, who gives a fuck, you know? So
yeah, I still agree. It's the it's whatever you liked when you were 11 factor.
Well,
for most of this
true
time. Like, people must think, like, you, like, even my cousin, she's like, you went to see the Smashing Pumpkins, was that sad for you? She said that in Thanksgiving. I'm like, oh, I was so hungover, I didn't want to start anything, but I was like, no, it wasn't sad. I like him. I liked them when I was 11. I still like them. I will like them when I'm 50.
Yeah.
You know, so.
Well, I mean, I guess I'll always love, like, Paul Molitor. He was, like, my favorite player when I was 8, you know? I'll still like him.
Still, I'll always like David Cohn. And yeah.
But I don't know. I still, even more than that, though, I appreciate good art, you know? Like, Third Eye Blind, for example. Like, I love that shit. And, like, he's coming out with a new album now. And if the album was bad, like, I could still tell. Like, I haven't sure. lost my footing, you know what I mean? Like, I don't love him enough for it to cloud my vision. It's just, he's still good to me. So, I don't know.
He is. Did you hear the Corolla story? We're going to talk about Corolla a lot, especially because Giovanni is the executive producer here. But, Corolla was at a party, I believe, at Seth MacFarlane's house, and Charlize Theron was there, or Theron, or whatever it is this
mm-hmm.
week. And he goes, oh, yeah, I talked to Stephen Jenkins. Yeah, that was really bad that he was cheating with you behind your back, or something like that. And she goes, what? I thought we just broke up. I didn't know he was cheating on me. And then he had to backtrack.
Oh, my gosh.
He had to backtrack really bad, and then... And then he, you know, Corolla's good with words, so he was able to backtrack and then make it up. Like, He had a way to soften the blow.
Well, look, every girl knows this too. So, especially like hot ones like Charlize Theron. Like when you date people like Stephen Jenkins, okay? Like I told you, our state is artists. Like we almost like Jenny Lewis has a lyric about it. Like you say I choose sadness that it never once has chosen me. Like. Maybe you're right. That's Jenny Lewis. It's a really great line. Riley nice. Kiley. Yeah. And it's like we can't be happy and settled in a relationship. Like, it's just impossible. And she has to know that going in. Like, what attracted her to him was this, like, diabolical craziness, like, that makes this great art. So she has to know he's going to sabotage it on his own at some point. So, but don't forget, he got her at the peak of her powers, like the peak, the absolute, like you forget, like now she's become like this older lady who's like a great actor, but she used to be the hottest girl anyone had ever, just like, she was like Jean Harlow with her like suicide blonde hair, like she, sure, and she was 5'10" and
Marilyn Monroe, yeah, almost, yeah.
Well, except skinny, and she was an actor, like she was talented and like super hot and super tall, and like, can you just imagine that, like she was number one, she was number one to me in like 1998, and freaking Stephen Jenkins gets her, like this like singer who's like not even super popular. I mean, Third Eye Blind, how's it gonna be, like,
but he's handsome,
he is, but handsome didn't matter though.
He looks like a pitcher, like, no, a baseball pitcher.
Andy Van Slyke. He looks exactly like Andy Van Slyke. It's one of my doppelgangers.
So yeah, they were built to be in ruins, just like the Fugees. And like, you think Wyclef knew that this might be the only time that they would be able to get together and make one true statement.
Just like I said about Charlize Theron dating Stephen Jenkins. Like, when you date a girl like Lauryn Hill, you know shit's gonna explode at some point. You just know. That's like your whole temple is built on a fault line. Like, it's like you knew it when you were putting it up that this is on a fault line. Yes, I could go marry some stable girl, but that's not what gets my blood pumping, you know? I have to have the crazy girl who makes beautiful stuff. Like, sorry, like, that's what I choose. But yes, part of you knows, like, as bad as you want it to work out and like be great, like, you know you're gonna explode.
Like, my last relationship, she was just a firecracker. Yeah. And just not mama material at all, and she'd get in, her dog would annoy the hell out of me, and but then, you know, sometimes I would think, you know, this is not going to last. Enjoy it while you got it. And of course it didn't last.
Of course not. So. But you knew that though. If someone like put a derringer under your chin 1 week into it and said, is this going to work out? Oh, you would say no.
Yeah, exactly. And yeah, we're almost done here. I thought we would wrap it up. I'm going to do the All Music review. It is a trust. Now, this is a legit trusted source on the internet. Stephen Thomas Erlewine, the editor, is a friend. And allmusic.com, great reviews. If you're, you know, just curious about music, check it out. And, of course, the Fugees, the score, gets 5 stars out of 5. Review by Steve Huey. A breath of fresh air in the gangsta-dominated mid-90s, the Fugees' breakthrough album The Score marked the beginning of a resurgence in alternative hip-hop. Its left-field multi-platinum success proved that there was a substantial untapped audience with an appreciation for rap music but little interested in thug life. The Score's eclecticism, social consciousness, and pop smarts drew millions of latent hip-hop listeners back into the fold, showing just how much the music had grown up. It not only catapulted the Fugees into stardom, but also launched the productive solo careers of Wyclef Jean and Lauryn Hill, the latter of which already ranks as one of the top female MCs of all time based on her work here. Not just a collection of individual talents, the Fugees' three MCs all share a crackling chemistry and a wide-ranging taste in music. The strong fondness for smooth soul and reggae is underscored by the two hit covers given slight hip-hop makeovers. Roberta Flack's Killing Me Softly with his song, and Bob Marley's No Woman, No Cry. Even when they're not relying on easy, recognizable tunes, their original material is powered by a raft of indelible hooks, especially the great Fugee La. There are also touches of blues and gospel, and the recognizable samples range from doo-wop to Enya. Their protest tracks are often biting yet tempered with pathos and humanity, whether they're attacking racial profiling amongst police, the beast, the insecurity behind violent posturing, cowboys, or the inability of many black people in the Western Hemisphere to trace their familial roots, family business. Yeah, the Chinese restaurant skit is a little dicey, but on the whole, the score balances intelligence and accessibility with an easy assurance and ranks as one of the most distinctive hip-hop albums of its era.
I co-sign on that.
Yeah, I think that was that pretty much hit the nail on the head. Yeah, let's do plugs and then we'll say if we think it's a 5-star. Tyler, where can they find you?
Dopspot.com. Sorry, I haven't done a doppelganger in like, I don't know, probably a year. But look at my Instagram. I try to post stuff on there, Tyler Kale. I try to retweet and everything. I've been doing a good job. I give myself a B+. Tyler Kale on Twitter. Yeah, that's it.
Nice. Sounds good. You can find me, andydare.com. That's D-E-R-E-R. I got a podcast, weekly podcast. You can do Andy Dare on Instagram, Andy Dare on Twitter. Pretty simple. I got the Honeycomb fanzine coming out monthly. Check it out. Okay. And do you think that the Fugees, the score, deserves a 5-star?
Absolutely. It's a 5. I'd take it head-to-head against just about anything. I mean, it's in my top, I don't know, 10 or 15 ever. That's across all genres.
Yeah, I think it definitely holds up. It's something completely different for its era. It's completely different from now. And, I think it holds up, which is the markings of a true 5-star classic. It hasn't aged at all, and I think it's really distinct. And, yeah, here's to hoping. I mean, I don't think that they need to come back and do another one, but maybe hoping that Lauryn Hill gets her stuff together and she can make another Miseducation.
I love that awesome album. Too. I mean, that Unplugged on MTV was legendary. Like, that shit was legendary. Yeah. The only one I liked more was the Counting Crows guy. What's his name? Adam Duritz. Yeah. Like, that's one of my heroes, too. I mean, he got Aniston and Cox back-to-back. Like, they were the Charlize Theron of 1994. Like, and he had both. Do you know what that takes? What kind of coxmanship that is? That's like Barry Pepper in the Clock Tower in Saving Private Ryan, just picking off like the top-notch hoes, you know?
Yeah, my parents were moving and I found a VHS of the How to Use Windows 95 described to you by Chandler and Jennifer Aniston.
Oh my God.
And Courtney Cox. That's going to be worth something. So, well, yeah, Fugees, the score, 5-star. Thanks for listening. Hopefully we'll be doing these on the regular. Tyler, you sound crystal clear. It's great. I'm sorry for the little blips and glitches for the last episode,
no problem.
But I think the quality came through and, we'll see you next week.
Yeah. Let me say this to the fans is I do think this is like our best endeavor to date. Like if you want to get a feel for like me and Andy, like this is where you get it. You know, this is really good. So I'm proud of this project.
Definitely. And spinclasspodcast.com for the other episodes, GZA, Liquid Swords, Notorious B.I.G., Ready to Die. And on behalf of Tyler, this is Andy signing off for Spin Class Podcast. Fuji la la. La la, it's the way that we rock.